What makes a good neighbor? Last week, my next-door neighbor knocked on my door when I was listening to music. He said, "Excuse me, we're having a gathering in our backyard and we can't hear a thing." "Not a problem," I replied. So I turned up the volume and said, "You should be able to hear it okay now." I was watching Neighbors the other day, and then they saw me. I heard once that arguments about fences are the major causes of feuds between neighbors, so last week I went and took the neighbor's fence down, just to be sure. Truthfully, I didn't do any of those things, though isn't it true that good fences make great neighbors? Whether you live in the suburbs or the city or a countryside home, whether you're in an apartment, condo, or a detached house, how we get along with our neighbors can be crucial to how beautiful the day is in our neighborhood, right? The book of Proverbs in the Old Testament offers wisdom. Verse 10 of chapter 27, "Better is a neighbor who is nearby than a relative who is far away." And of course, that's a neighbor that we get along with, right? From our gospel reading this morning, it's a good question to ask of Jesus: who is my neighbor? And Jesus answers that question with one of the most famous stories of the Bible. It's a story which includes many Hollywood movie twists and turns. In this story, there's violence, there's crime, there's racial discrimination, there's hatred, there's neglect, there's unconcern, but there's also love and grace and mercy. It's a great story. It's a story known not just within the walls of the church and among Christians. In fact, the Ontario government passed a law in 2001 called the Good Samaritan Act, which makes it illegal to do what the first two people do in this story, and it protects the third person in this story from being sued by the person who was helped. The Good Samaritan Act. Who is my neighbor? And it sounds like a great question, right? But we're going to see this morning how Jesus flips the question head over heels to help us see the gospel. Actually, in the section just before what was read from Luke 10 this morning, Jesus has been teaching the disciples, and then Jesus prays to God because they get it. They get what Jesus is saying. And Jesus says, "You have hidden these things from the wise and the intelligent and have revealed them to infants. Yes, Father, for such is your gracious will." Jesus was so excited that these disciples, these simple people, fishermen and farmers, that they got the message. And then verse 25 says, and it says it very intentionally, it says, "just then," which you could translate as well, "at that very time," just after Jesus is so thrilled about his disciples, "at that very time," with the sense of, wouldn't you know what happens next? Because what happens next, after Jesus has taught Christianity 101 to his disciples, and it seems they're ready to go out into their neighborhoods to live the gospel, someone steps into the fray to complicate what really should be a very simple task: to love your neighbor. And the Bible tells us that it's a lawyer who asks this question. Sorry, lawyers. And I know maybe it's a bit unfair, even of the Bible, to paint lawyers the way it does here, but this particular lawyer, he is trying to paint Jesus into a corner. Let's be honest, lawyers like to ask questions. It's their bread and butter to ask and answer tricky questions. There was this lawyer who was asked by somebody, "If I give you $100, will you answer two simple questions for me?" And the lawyer replied, "Sure, what's your second question?" I know, it's really unfair. This lawyer, of course, and there's so many good lawyers, we wouldn't be the society that we are in the best sense of the word without our good lawyers. But this lawyer, of course, was a legal expert in religious law, which is why Jesus responds to his first question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus says, well, what is written in the law? And Jesus meant, of course, not Jerusalem law, but Jesus meant, what does the Torah say? What does the Bible say? Sure enough, this student of the Bible knows the exact places where the Old Testament already summarizes the law by loving God and loving neighbor. And so Jesus, who, remember, has just taught Christianity 101 to the disciples, says, right answer. Do this and live. In other words, do this and live. In other words, you're a fine student. You get an A+ for what you know. Now get out there and love your neighbor. Practice your faith. But that's where this expert in the law wants to stay in the classroom a little bit longer and asks, well, who is my neighbor? And maybe you can already see how Jesus needs to do something to get this guy to stop asking questions and start putting what he's learned to practice. Because it seems for him, who is my neighbor is like trying to narrow it down to a science to see exactly who I need to love and who, by the way, I'm allowed to ignore. When he asks, who is my neighbor, this religious stickler is trying to find a way to get off the hook from loving certain people. He's hoping that Jesus will say something like what the author Frederick Buechner does in his interpretation of this question by embellishing a possible response. Frederick Buechner says that Jesus might have said, very well then, henceforth, a neighbor, hereafter referred to as the party of the first part, shall be defined as meaning a person of the Jewish descent whose legal residence is within a radius of no more than 3 statute miles from one's own legal residence, unless there is another person of Jewish descent, hereafter referred to as the party of the second part, living closer to the party of the first part than the one who is one himself, in which case the party of the second part is to be construed as the neighbor to the party of the first part, and one is then oneself relieved of all responsibility of any kind to the matters hereunto pertaining. The people to count as neighbors with that kind of a definition are restricted to a very small group of people we already know, have everything in common with us, and who can quite possibly benefit me and you. And that's, of course, not even close to what Jesus says, of course. Jesus doesn't offer any kind of legal definition. Jesus, instead, to the question, who is my neighbor, what does Jesus do? Like he always does, he tells a story. And the very first words of the story are a giant clue to how this story will answer the trick question of the lawyer. Jesus starts. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. First of all, quite literally, this means, a man means some guy. In other words, this man going down from Jerusalem could be anybody. He might live in your house next door in Jerusalem and he's been on a walk, or anywhere between there and Jericho or beyond. He could be rich, he could be poor, he could be mean, he could be friendly, he could be anybody, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. And we can almost see the lawyer at the edge of his seat mulling over another question for clarity. What man are we talking about? Can you give me just a little bit more detail? Somebody I know, is he Jewish? Is he a Gentile? Is he gay or straight? Is he Roman or Greek? Is he slave or free? What man is this, Jesus? But the way Jesus tells it, this could be anybody. A certain man was taking a trip and got robbed, beaten, all his money taken, and left to bleed in a ditch. Two religious people pass by, treat him like roadkill, and it's not like they don't see him, because Jesus tells the story and he says they actually stroll to the other side of the street to avoid the man. And then a third person comes along, Jesus says, and it's a Samaritan. And if you were in the audience listening to Jesus tell this story, you could probably see that Jewish lawyer's eyes roll and his teeth clench just with the mention of a Samaritan. And it turns out he's the good guy. It might be like hearing the term Nazi for a World War II vet. Or today for us to hear Boko Haram or Taliban or Al-Qaeda. We could perhaps call this story today the Good Muslim. Samaritans, they didn't behave like Nazis, but they were seen by some as the enemy. But in this story, Jesus gives the Samaritan status of a hero, who goes to the man in the ditch, helps him, takes him to a hotel, pays the bill, and promises to return later to check in and pay any further expenses. And that's all we hear about the certain man who was mugged. There's no exchange of names, no reporters for a photo op. None of that matters, because the Samaritan's not worried about himself. And the way Jesus tells it, this is a complete contrast to the others, and of course a subtle jab at the person being told this story, whom Luke tells us earlier was actually trying to justify himself. And this is where we should note how Jesus uses the story to turn the question of the lawyer on its head. We might expect Jesus to say here at this point in the story, "So you asked me who your neighbor is, and I'm telling you it's that guy in the ditch." But that's not what Jesus does. That would be the obvious answer, but Jesus doesn't say that, does he? Instead, Jesus says, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" And when you think of it, it's quite a turn of phrase. Not just for the lawyer, but for all of us. Because too often we think of loving our neighbor, and we think, and it's tempting for us as well to whittle down the possibilities, to narrow the field, to see who out there might count as somebody that we should be a neighbor to. And Jesus suggests in this story that the question, "Who is my neighbor?" is far less more important than making sure we ourselves are neighborly. Being a good neighbor is more important. The lawyer asks, "Who is my neighbor?" Jesus says, "Never mind. Are you a good neighbor?" Who was a neighbor, Jesus says? Probably with his head sulking down, but knowing that Jesus has now turned the tables on him, the lawyer says, "The one who showed mercy." The question of who is my neighbor isn't important when we are people who act neighborly. So what does that mean in your hood? Not just those next door, of course them as well, but also others on your path each day, each week. To whom is Jesus calling you to be a good neighbor? Who are some of the unlikely people, the certain man people, the unnamed people whom you can show mercy to the people you can help without getting any return, where there will be no reward for you or a photo op, except for your eternal reward? Here's a timely quote: "Service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth. Said by none other than Cassius Clay, later renamed Muhammad Ali. This past week, there was an excellent story, though also sad, right here in Ottawa on a transpo bus. Some young men were harassing a woman wearing a hijab, pulling at it, insulting her, when the driver stopped the bus and came to her rescue. He wasn't looking for fame or attention. He was just doing his job. Actually, no, not just doing his job. He was being a good neighbor. He was going above and beyond. There are so many people who come across our paths to whom you and I can be a good neighbor, and we see the opportunities. We see them so clearly when we stop asking, who is my neighbor? And instead, to whom can I be a neighbor? And it seems it's good also to ask this as a church called Knox as well. Not just who are the neighbors of Knox, rather to whom can we be neighborly? That's what's great about doors open this weekend. What opportunities we've had to welcome and talk with people. It's why also we partner with AA, and it's why we host the Muslim Care Center on Fridays. It's why we are building partnerships with the university, the campus ministry, because we want to be a good neighbor in the center town of Ottawa. And of course, let's remember that Jesus doesn't just tell this story for us, so we can learn how to be a neighbor. Truthfully, Jesus lives this story. The Gospel according to John, chapter 1, says it best. The Word became flesh. Jesus enters into our world. Eugene Peterson translates this as God moved into the neighborhood. In a moment, we're going to celebrate communion as God's gracious reminder of this great truth. That God doesn't look around trying to figure out who among all of us are deserving of his love. God instead moves into the neighborhood in Jesus Christ, and like a good neighbor, he picks us up and he feeds us. Lives with us. He wants to live in your heart. He wants to feed you. He wants to walk with you on your path. Because God, in Jesus too, is a good neighbor for this planet and for you.